All right, Jim, episode earlier this week, you discussed how women are attracted to you and how you didn't...
You dragged my ass into that conversation.
Well, I was
giving you
praise.
I'll take it.
You know, competency porn is your bag. And then, you know, you kind of remarked, like, I don't get when these women are into me. And we kind of went down that path.
Yeah. I have to tell you something. I cannot in any way explain the appeal of me that is apparently happening in the comments.
Oh, I can. We've done it, bro. But no, seriously, you are, what did we call it a couple weeks ago? Competency porn. You are competency porn.
Okay.
That's you.
I'll take it.
Yes.
I'll take it.
And I think actually it's pretty understandable why they're into you. And I think a lot of guys could learn from that.
I mean, I think there's something to be learned from it for sure. And I think what for young men and even for older men, I think there's something to be learned. But I think particularly for young men, because young men are usually the ones who are kind of on the come up and trying to figure out their way around women and attracting women. And I do think there's something to be learned from it. And that is, I have found in my own journey as a man that the distinguishing characteristic between my 50s and my 20s and 30s is I'm way more patient than I used to be. I'm way more calm. I'm way more sort of thinking about, you know, where something is going, but not in a rush necessarily to have to get there. I'm decisive, but I'm not in a massive rush to get to a place. And I think there's something in that for young men when it comes to the appeal from women, because I think confidence is super important. We all know that. I think women talking a lot in the zeitgeist now about the mental load that women carry and how much they feel like they have to do and how much they feel they have to be like a girl boss and also a supportive nurturer and all these things, and sort of becoming the kind of man that allows a woman to feel like, okay, he's in control. He has my interests at heart. He's looking out for me as much, if not more, than himself. And he's making himself, the person, like, he is in his own essence when he's in control of things. And I think that's very attractive to a number of women. It wouldn't be attractive. Nothing's attractive to all women, but I think it's attractive to a number of women. And it allows a lot of women to be able to sort of, you know, relax in a way that they couldn't with someone. And we saw it when we were doing, you know, that cross-examination a few weeks ago, where a woman said, you know, if a man brings out the little girl in you or the young girl in you, he's like a man. And if he brings out, you know, like if you have to be a mommy to him, he's a boy. Like there's something about the energy that a man who's in control brings out. But the lesson to be learned from this, I think, for young men is, you know, maybe we've passed the point now as a culture where this whole like eternal youth thing is hot. Like maybe men shouldn't be 40 years old wearing hoodies. Like maybe what we should be doing now is like shave your face, put on a fucking tie. Like there was a period of time where men were, you know, clean shaven, put together. You dressed like you were going somewhere important. You behaved in a civilized manner. Then it became kind of cool to like grow a beard, be a little more like, you know, wild and feral. But maybe it's swinging back in the other direction now. And maybe what young men should be thinking about is becoming someone who demonstrates the fact that you're in control of yourself. Because the first step to being in a situation where I think a woman feels comfortable saying, okay, I'm going to let you be in charge. I'm going to let you, because a lot of men are looking for a woman. This is why this trad wife thing is popular, is men are looking for a woman who's going to let them sort of lean into their natural dominance as men, or their desire to be a provider and a protector, which again, may be a function of testosterone, maybe a function of culture, maybe a function of the two, who the hell knows? There's never going to answer that question unequivocally. But I think maybe the way to first signal that, I hate to quote Jordan Peterson, but you know, the truth is like clean your own fucking room, make your own bed, like get your own act together first. And I think that is something that in like the red pill space or the manosphere, they're definitely encouraging men to do, like get to the gym, get your body together, get your finances together, get your stuff together and begin that process. Where I think there's something to learn for young women is, you're not going to find a guy who's fully formed, right? Who's professionally successful, personally successful, you know, emotionally well-adjusted, you know, he's done therapy, he's done all those things, so he has an emotional vocabulary, all those things that might make someone appealing. You're not going to find that guy fully formed and single and interested in dating you, a much younger woman, much of the time, in a long-term way and building a relationship with you. So finding a young man who's sort of in that space, like on the come up, I think it's like a stock, you know, by the time everybody else wants to buy it, you know, you've kind of missed your opportunity to buy low and sell high, or to buy low and hold, you know? So I do think there is value in letting, you know, having some connection when a person is on the come up looking for that raw talent. When I hire young lawyers, it's sort of a, it's a useful analogy. When I hire young lawyers, I always say, like, I don't really care where they went to school. I don't really care what their resume is, what journal they did in law school or what their grades were. Are you young, smart, and hungry? Like, that's what I want. Are you smart? Are you hungry? Are you tenacious? Like, are you like looking to build something? You know, are you someone who's ambitious and wants to be successful, wants to be good at your craft? Find someone who's passionate about what it is that they're doing, that wants to be competent for the sake of being competent. Like, I think that is, that's why I said to my sons, and I've said it before on the show, that I told my sons when they were young, you'll lose a lot more money chasing women than you'll lose women chasing money. And that wasn't to say, oh, women are gold diggers, and if you're successful financially, you'll have a lot of women interested in you. That is true. Like, that is absolutely true. There are a lot of women who just are looking for a guy who's financially successful, and they want, you know, him to provide for them. Most men I know that are highly successful are not going to be interested in that. They're not going to be interested in a woman who brings nothing to the table except her ability to be a consumer of your funds and arm candy. Like, you can, you know, you can hire someone to be that if you wanted to. You can hire a model. You can hire a sex worker. So the question really becomes, like, what does this person bring to the equation? I think for young men, again, like, you should be looking for someone who builds you up, should be looking for someone who believes in you. But I think the more that you push yourself into developing your own success, developing your own way of finding success, your own definition of success, the more confidence you're going to have. And I think women are very attracted to confidence. Again, a certain type of women. And I think for women out there, there's a lesson to be learned. And that is really try to identify someone who brings that level of passion for their work, that level of commitment to their vision of their future self. I think those are all really, really useful things to find. That's a lesson to be learned from my, to me, somewhat inexplicable appeal to the fairer sex.
Do you think that it has to come from a place that it's very real and genuine, or can you put on a front for what you're describing?
I think you can put on a front, but I think that it won't last very long. And I also think that you're not getting anything of value. Like, if you're looking to just, like, bed down a bunch of random women, okay, like, there's a lot of ways you can lie and get people in bed. Just like there's a lot of, you know, when people are dishonest, there's a lot of grifts out there that'll be successful in a short-term way. But if the goal is genuinely to find connection and happiness, I'm not even saying necessarily being marriage-minded. It may just be you want to find genuine connection with another person. I think you have to be as much of yourself as you can be. There's something you're passionate about. It doesn't have to be, you know, your professional life. It doesn't have to be a lucrative profession. It could be your art. It could be creativity. It could be something. You're a writer, you're a filmmaker, you're a photographer. It's that passion and that excitement about wanting to be good at something and competent at something that I think is so attractive. I love being around that, not even in a romantic context. I love being with someone who's deeply passionate about something. Like, I'm not super into sports, but when I talk to a friend who's, like, fanatical about football or baseball, something I'm not into, just their natural passion about it and their excitement about it and wanting to sort of share with me what they find so interesting about it, it tells me so much about who they are as a person. And it's fun just to be around that. It's why I said I think the Olympics are really interesting, because the fact that this is something a person has devoted their whole life to. You know, I used to go to bookstores a lot before basically all of them went out of business. And I always like going in the magazine section. And when you walk around the magazine section, like, there's, like, woodworking magazine. And it's like, there are people who are so into woodworking that there's an entire magazine about this particular kind of woodworking. I know nothing about that. Like, go outside. There's a bug you'll find somewhere on the ground, right? Somewhere there'll be a little bug. There is someone who has a PhD, right, studying just that bug. Like, they devoted their whole life to understanding the mating cycle of that bug and the conditions of that bug and the origin of that bug. Like, there are people have passions for things that you know fucking nothing about. And again, I'm not suggesting you have to adopt someone else's passions, but give yourself the opportunity in life to be around people who are passionate about the things they're doing. Like, that is, having represented artists, having represented musicians, the ones who are really interested in becoming famous are not that interesting. But the ones who are deeply passionate about what they're creating are fascinating. Like, they're just fun to be around because they're so devoted to this thing. And by the way, I don't think it's a coincidence that that's who people might find attractive romantically, because there's this sense of, if he's that passionate about this, imagine what he'd be like in the bedroom, or imagine what he'd be like about our connection as a couple. I don't think that that is a wrong thing to extrapolate. Like, what you're seeing is that this person can be deeply passionate, in control, disciplined, thoughtful, conscientious, you know, that they can sustain an effort, you know, to accomplish something that they're passionate about. Those are all very attractive traits. So I would say, again, focus on the doing. And if you're a young person and this is what you're trying to aspire to, it's really in the doing. It's really in the focusing on your craft and doing what it is that you do on a day-to-day basis, and doing it as passionately and as authentically as you possibly can. So I think there's a lot to be learned for young men about that. All right, gang, I'm going to share something with you about a sexton secret. And this is one of my secret weapons. One of my secret weapons, first time I've been, it's just us talking, so I can say this to you. Products by Soul, Out of Office gummies. I have to tell you, Out of Office THC and CBD gummies, I have been using these for years. I have been a subscriber for years. We actually approached them and said, hey, can we advertise your products? And I was thrilled when the team at Soul, a family business, said, yeah, get involved, Sexton Show. So we're here with you now with an offer code we're going to tell you about in a second. Sexton, 30% off on your first order of Out of Office. And I'm telling you, once you try these, you're going to try them again and again and be a subscriber just like I've been for years. Out of Office THC CBD gummies let you control your experience. They have the singles. These are great for me on a Saturday afternoon after it's been a long week and I just want to chill. 1.5 milligrams of THC, 15 milligrams of CBD. When I have a trial the next day and I need a good night's sleep and I want something that's really going to bring me down, I go with the doubles myself. These are 3 milligrams of THC, 30 milligrams of CBD. Sometimes I'll take two of these if I really need to get some good sleep. When I say to you, what's great about Out of Office is you can control your experience. They give you the tools to do that. You start low, you start slow, and you figure out exactly what it is. And I have to tell you, after years of using these, I know exactly which experience I want and exactly what the recipe is for me to get it. So check out Out of Office gummies. I really think you're going to love these. I know I absolutely do. Use offer code Sexton at the link below for 30% off of your first order.
You started the discussion mentioning your age, and I do think that plays a big factor here, because I feel like everything you're describing comes easier when you're 40, 50, you have 20 years of experience.
So when you're
talk to the people who are 20 and they're stumbling their way through this.
Yeah, what I would say is, I mean, in my 20s, I was still deeply passionate about what I was doing. I remember thinking, if I could do this job, being a divorce lawyer, I was an assigned counsel attorney at the time. Like, I had gone out on my own. I'd only been out of law school about a year. I was making $25 an hour for assigned counsel cases paid by the state. And I would take every case I could to trial just so I could get practice. And, you know, but I was really passionate about the work, as passionate as I am now. It was really just the feeling of, it wasn't about the money. I remember saying, if I could make $100,000 a year and do this job, I'll be the happiest person in the world. I look at that now, I laugh my ass off, because, you know, it's so much more lucrative of a profession than that. But it wasn't about the money. It really was about just doing it really well and wanting to be excellent at my craft. I still feel that way. I still want to get better and better at the things I'm doing, whether it's this show, whether it's writing, whether it's speaking, whether it's, again, my day job of being a trial lawyer. I'm constantly trying to evolve and get better, adopt new technologies, see what I can learn that's out there, what new things people are doing. I'm constantly watching my adversaries in court and going, oh, he did that really well. I should steal a piece of that, or I should learn from that style and try to adapt that. Or here's something I'm doing that now people see coming, so let me totally pivot so they don't see it now strategically. I think constantly reevaluating yourself. This has more to do with being the kind of person that looks at yourself honestly all the way through. Like, looks at yourself and says, okay, here's what I need to work on. Here's where I'm doing well and where I should keep leaning into my competence. And I think you can do that at any age. But yes, of course, I think by the time you're in your 50s, you sort of realize, okay, this is who I am. This is who I'm not. Like, I'm not going to beat myself up over the fact that I'm not going to be the strong, silent type. Like, that's not who I am. Like, if you don't like people who talk, you're not going to like me. And that's okay. Like, there's not everybody's going to like you. I think you start, as you get older, to get really comfortable in your identity and not really being so caught up in it. And I do think women find attractive the non-urgency of things. Like I would encourage young men at this chapter in society to consider when you're seeing a woman to make very clear to her that, yeah, I don't cross certain lines. Like I don't sleep with a woman who I'm not monogamous with, or I don't sleep with a woman who I don't have some kind of commitment with. Flip the script a little bit, like show them, hey, this is not, you know, who I'm not someone who's just going to run around and sleep with people. And by the way, I think you may find yourself actually healthier making that choice and saying, you know what, I'm not going to expend my energy sexually, personally on someone until I really see that there's a connection worth having. And by the way, most of us know a meal tastes better when you're hungry. So, you know, if you're sleeping with people on the first date, although it must be very tempting to do so, just like if you got a piece of chocolate cake in front of you, you're tempted to eat it. I think there's value learning as young as possible that delayed gratification actually feels really good. Like we're a very immediate culture now. We've become very short attention span. That's only getting worse with time. So deliberately steering out of that as a young man, I think would be a really, really great idea. And to say to a woman, for example, so she can relax, hey, listen, our first four dates, we're not going to do anything physical other than maybe a kiss goodnight. That's it. Now, A, you've asserted some control and some confidence in yourself by doing that, which I think is good. Two, you've taken a pressure off of her of sort of, is what's this guy's intentions? Is he going to try something? Is he not? Like, I think there's value in that. I think there's value in both of those exercises. And again, if this is someone who you're really going to be super attracted to and they're super attracted to you and that tension is building and building over the course of your first few dates, I think that's really valuable. I think there's something to be said for that. So I think these are all things that a person could leverage really easily. If I was a young man on the dating market right now, I think that's something I would absolutely lean into, is the idea of asserting that dominant control or that dominant perspective, that masculine frame, if you want to call it that, in ways that I think are more in control. Like rather than sort of like, you know, using that as a mechanism of, well, if you don't meet my needs, I'm going to be out of here. Sort of saying, look, here's what the first couple times we hang out is going to look like. It's going to look like us getting to know each other and you getting to know me, me getting to know you, us spending some time together, building tension between us. Nothing is going to happen physically between us, even if you want to. By the way, it also then flips the dialogue from like a pickup artist perspective. It flips the dialogue into more of a, you know, less of a like beggar with his cup out, like I want to sleep with you as soon as you let me. It flips it into something of, listen, I haven't decided yet if I want to sleep with you and you haven't decided yet if you want to sleep with me. And let's not rush that choice. Let's not rush that decision. I don't know many women who wouldn't find that attractive. I think there's something attractive about A, building tension, and B, you know, being a man who's in control of himself, including his own sexual, you know, proclivities. I think, especially too, if a woman's looking to get in a long-term relationship with you, I think she wants to know that you're the kind of man that can find a woman very attractive and not have sex with her. And I think that demonstrates that very early on in a relationship. So there's only upside as far as I can see, and no downside in approaching relationships from that perspective. So that would be the advice. Maybe this is my next book after the next book, is like a dating guide for young men.
I think people would listen. And I think real quick to wrap up here, I think the problem is, at least in the last few years, young men have been listening to the wrong guys.
Yeah. And yeah. I mean, look, I think that those guys are trying. I really don't believe that there's villains in this story. Like I think the red pill and manosphere like gets a really bad name, and I don't think it deserves it always, because I think a lot of times it's just like women who get on and talk about how men suck. Like I understand, like I don't think it's ideal, and just like I don't think some of the manosphere stuff is ideal, but I understand how it evolved. It evolved as a function of people being hurt and being disappointed, and people feeling like, well, you know what? Screw you. I'm just going to weaponize. Like, you want a villain? You want to vilify me? Fine. I'll be a real villain. I get that. Like, I see it from men and from women. I don't think it's a path to anything useful. I think an eye for an eye makes everybody blind. Like, I think it, to paraphrase Martin Luther King, like, dark doesn't drive out dark. Light can. Like, all this does is adds darkness to a night already devoid of stars. Like, there's already so much missing in the world. Like, adding to this by becoming the evil that people were reacting to, like, I don't think that that's the solution to this. But I do think there is a solution. And I think the solution is to become someone who I think is worthy of respect. And I think that men in the male spaces out there, in the manosphere, You know, Chris Williamson, you know, in our recent conversation was talking about what he called the gentlemanosphere, which he said was like he and I and Scott Galloway and a few other people who are, again, not this like placating, like the people I've criticized on cross-examination, that like pandering, like, mm-hmm. ladies, as a man, here's where I think men suck. Like, mm-hmm. I find that just, dude, first of all, they're not going to sleep with you. I'm mm-hmm. sorry. Like, they don't find that attractive. The whole male feminist thing, like, I think gives most women the ick. What I think they like about that is they like someone who gets the point, right? But when you read like romance novels, you know, that are written by women for women and consumed by women, it's usually not a guy who's like, darling, let's go to Bella Abzug Park together and just reminisce about feminism. Like, that's not what's interesting to women. I think women are interested in masculine polarity. I think they're interested in men who are in control of themselves first. And so that is, I think, the best of the manosphere and the red pill space is about get yourself under control first. Because even somebody like Andrew Tate, someone who's very traditionally red pill, you know, look at like Fresh and Fit. Like, these are people who some people would say are the most toxic aspects of the manosphere. There's still a nugget in there of get your own shit together, get your body together, get your finances together, like get your mind right. And then you will become something more appealing to women. And again, I know a lot of, you know, men say like, oh, why should we accord ourselves to women? It's not about according yourselves to women. I didn't do any of this to impress women. I did this because you want to be the best version of yourself. You want to be successful. You want to be taken seriously by women and men. Like, I wanted to be someone who was worthy of respect. That was the goal, was to be worthy of respect and to be someone who gives respect. So I think that is the goal. And if that then creates, like, because there's a difference between I'm going to do this because I want to be attractive and I'm going to do this because it's an authentic expression of how I feel about myself and the world. I think that the latter people can sniff out and the former people can sniff out and run from. That's going to wrap it up for today, folks. And listen, if you disagree, if you have some different perspective, go to sextonshow.com, send us some feedback, send us a video with your perspective on this. I know this is a topic that people get quite heated on. So follow up with us, like, subscribe. Remember, hit the notification bell. It really does help the channel. We'll see you again soon. For now, we're adjourned.